And we're back. Welcome to Deep Thinking, the one, the only, the original motorcycle road racing podcast. Everything else is merely a derivative of the genius idea of Michael Gugis and Ed Sorbo.
What Even their podcast came before ours.
You know what? Time is just a way of keeping it's just a way of keeping everything from happening.
Number 29.
At once. Number 29.
We're almost going to be too old to trust.
Okay. So this weekend I was at Vegas, the hotel I was staying at, filled with aging punk rockers at some punk rock festival. And I don't know if there's a sadder sight in the world than a 50-year-old punk rocker carrying around a kid, you know? It's like, you know what, dude? Maybe it's time. Maybe
to grow
it's
up?
Time. Yeah, just, you know, I don't think you have to grow up. I think it's way better to fly under the radar. Nobody knows how counterculture I really am until it's way too late. That's my argument. Ed, did I tell you about getting the stickers for the Bandit?
Getting the stickers for the Bandit.
Yeah, exactly.
Those stickers?
Yeah, because I repainted it.
Okay.
Yeah, I got them from a place in England. Okay?
Because they don't have sticker shops in America.
I just found the place online that would do custom stickers in the color that I wanted, right? And I waited, and they said they shipped, and I waited, and I waited, and I said, hey, sent them an email. I said, you guys shipped these. You said you shipped them, but I haven't seen them yet. Do you know what happened? And I got an email back that said, we have had so many shipments to the United States lost that we are no longer going to do business in the United States, and they refunded my money. I thought, well, that was, you know, I'm really sorry to hear that. 3 weeks later or 4 weeks later, what shows up on my front door? The sticker. A note from the post office that says, come get this package. It's from the United Kingdom. All right. So I go to the post office. I ask the guy, I'm like, what's the deal? He's like, well, these things have been in customs for like weeks. And like, why? It's just a little envelope, right? I'll bet it's somebody in the customs whose great, 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 great grandpappy fought against the British during the Revolutionary War.
And we won that one.
Yes, but
this guy's grandpappy fought in the War of 1812 that we lost. That's why he's still angry.
He's still pissed off.
So did, like, did you send the money back to
yes,
the guys?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay,
I sent him money. And
who
I sent
are you?
I'm Michael Gugis. And you can read about what I have to think about motorcycles at motorcycleroadracing.com. Motorbike road racing. I'll get it right. Motorbike road racing .blogspot.com. And he's Ed Sorbo. And you can find him on the web at le-suspension.com or Lindemann Engineering.
You got it right twice
now. Look out, you know.
Hey, we got a correction.
We got a correction.
Yeah.
No, that can't be correct because we're never wrong.
So in episode 26, we talked about the Rhino Fender.
Right.
The website is rhinoracing.com, not rhinofender.com.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Hopefully. Well, there is a guy, some car guy, who it's Rhino Racing. It's a car. But I'm pretty sure that when people typed in Rhino, they'd figure that out, right?
In other words, let's hope our listeners are smart enough to go, hey, that does not look like a motorcycle.
But it is covered with aerodynamic devices.
Mm. All right. What are we going to talk about?
We're going to talk about toolboxes mainly. But first, we're going to have a short answer to a question that could have a really long answer.
Which is?
But I don't know the long answer, so we're going to go with the short answer. So we got an email, and who's it from? Curtis.
Curtis,
and
what up,
Curtis bro? Likes our show. Thank you, Curtis. And Curtis is the one that corrected me on the Rhino Racing website address. And he asked a suspension question specific to, you know, what kind of work does Lindemann Engineering, which I answered by email. And the possible question for the show, continuing on the don't be afraid of new technology, which, you know, we probably talked about in the past. I'm never afraid of new technology except the technology that I'm afraid of. Oh, he was talking about you, and because you're afraid of aerodynamic technology.
No,
and I'm not afraid of it.
I'm opposed
so
to it on aesthetic
he wants
grounds.
To know
And the way it's implemented. In
what kind of training / data tools do you see as the best for developing young novice riders versus the factory boys getting the big bucks?
Huh?
We all can't use a $20,000 system, telemetry,
right?
Blah, blah, blah. Okay, so here's my theory on why we have data systems, telemetry, whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
crew chiefs got tired of dealing with riders and drivers who couldn't tell them what was going on, right? And, you know, probably they were the most positive about something they were the most wrong about, right? And then you do whatever you should do based on that piece of useless data, and your whole world just goes crazy.
Right.
So they started developing data systems, and frequently, probably the majority of the time, right, you get, like, look, dude, the data says, you know, you're doing X, and you're telling me you're doing B. It's so not even close. So shut up.
So you're saying this whole thing started with some crew chief going, I'm sick and tired of this.
Well,
I am developing something.
You know, I've had riders tell me they don't back off for turn 9 at Big Willow. Right? I mean, but you don't back off compared to turn 1? What do you mean? It's just useless information.
And
so data systems, unless the system's broken or not functioning, which there's plenty of that, you know, they are facts. You can't argue with them. It's like having a stopwatch,
It's an accurate bit of feedback.
A perfect example of this would be Michael refuses to get an onboard timer on his bike.
You
don't have one,
Don't want one.
See? And so then you don't even have the basic piece of information. Did you go faster or slower with the change? Oh, well, it feels faster. Oh, well.
Doesn't matter.
You
no.
told me about the guy who said he was tuning his car based on feeling how much, okay? You can't have it both ways.
No,
so
I agree.
My answer to this question, and this is something that I do with everybody that I get a chance to do it with.
Okay.
And there is even a blog post on my website. It's only 5 or 6 posts back.
le-suspension.com
on the blog page that tells you specifically what to do. And it tells you how to learn what your clicker adjusters do. So you need to ride the bike with the adjusters all the way open and the adjusters all the way closed. And so you have, if you go all the way open and all the way closed, you have 2 changes to the rebound and 2 changes to the compression that you can make, 4 changes. And you're going to do them the same front and rear. So that's 4 rides. You can do all of that in 1 20-minute track day session if you have the tool sitting on the pit wall and you just pull in and grab the tool and, right?
Or have a
now,
friend
if you're
help
really
you
smart,
that, right?
Yeah, you have a friend. But if you're really smart, you have a friend send you on the track with 6 combinations. There's 4 things you can do, so 2 times it's a repeat. And then when you come in and you say blah 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 about whatever you say the bike did, your friend writes that down. When you're all done, there should be only 4 answers.
Right.
2 times should be a repeat of 2 previous times because it's the same test.
But only and, 2 times.
Yeah.
Only 2 times.
And so then when you get all done and you got 6 different things, or you got only 1 thing on all of them, then you know the rider needs more skills.
It's clearly, yeah, it's clearly
and it's,
the rider.
It's not a bad thing to be a new rider and to be learning this stuff. Don't feel bad about it. It just tells you that you're not ready to have good feedback. But in this case, this is where data would be useful.
It's hard to get accurate feedback at anything about life. The capacity for human beings to delude themselves is massive.
Well, I would argue it's exactly the opposite. It's easy because all you have to do is just say what really happened.
But we can't perceive that.
Yes, you can.
Not the new guy.
Yes, they can. The new guys are the best. Because they don't have a bunch of things they heard Rossi say that they think they're supposed to say. They just come in and they talk about how blue the sky was in turn 1 and how dark and foreboding and scary turn 2 was. And then I know the difference between turn 1 and turn 2. And I know that the bike is doing all the turn 1 things better, which is when the bike has more load, it's working better.
Okay.
And when it has less load, it's working less well. Right? Because turn 1 is a banked uphill corner.
And we're talking about Big Willow.
Yes.
Okay.
And turn 2 is a downhill, and then it becomes an uphill corner, and there's constantly changing going on, and the rider's not looking far enough ahead because he can't see to the exit of the corner, so he's all lost and yada, yada, yada. Right? The information is there if you would just run your mouth and say what is running through your brain. So my answer to this question about what's the best form of data is go to a track day and play with your adjusters, check out my blog, follow those instructions if you like, come up with your own situation. There are no wrong answers. The act of doing this will teach you something which will lead to the thing that you don't understand,
right,
that you can then try to find the answer to. if you don't ask the question, is the sun really going around us?
Right.
You will never get to the idea that, wow, there's a solar system. You will only think that you are the center of everything.
I'm going to say two things. Number one, you already have some data acquisition on your bike. If you have a speedo or a tachometer, you can, and this is a trick that I've learned, there's always a place at the exit of a corner where you know you're going to make the corner. There's a cone, a reference point. You go by it. When you go by it, you look down and see what number is on the tach.
So you look at your dash at the same place on the track every lap, and you use that as a reference.
Right.
Did my drive out of the previous corner make it better or worse?
Right.
I'm going faster. It's better.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
That.
You can use the tach. It doesn't have to be a speedo. Is inaccurate. The tach is much more accurate.
Yes.
And if you're in the same gear, then the higher RPM means you're going faster, and that's what you want to know.
The one time, one of the times I set a lap record at Willow, I knew I had the record well before I crossed the start finish line when I had a lap timer on the bike, because I was actually racing and not just playing, just because I looked down at the tach at that point coming out of turn 9, went past my reference point, and went, holy crap, I've never seen a number that big.
So
the other question I have, though, Ed, in regards to this data acquisition thing, though, is tire wear or wear patterns, is that useful data acquisition for a track day rider?
Everything on the bike is useful.
Okay.
But the problem is that people apply the wrong amount of value to it. So, for example, the zip tie on the fork leg only tells you the maximum travel that your bike used. And that probably happened one time on some bump that you don't normally hit,
right?
And so then, on top of that, so then people think, oh, I'm using too much travel, or I'm using too little travel, or whatever. But they've only got this one data point, and that one data point is worth maybe 10% value. But if you give it 60% value, you're gonna have a problem. And
everything around that.
To compound the problem, this person doesn't even know where the zip tie ends up when the fork's bottom physically. They're just assuming it's supposed to go all the way down to the foot.
Right.
And some do get very close to the foot, but many are an inch away from the foot at maximum travel.
Got it.
And it's really hard to, you can't feel the fork's bottom on a stock fork because it has a hydraulic anti-bottoming device. So what you feel is the pressure going up and the oil being squeezed out of a little container.
Got it.
And so it gets to the stopping point very gradually. It doesn't go dunk, metal to metal
contact.
Doesn't
make the noise anymore.
No, not anymore. It never did that. We take those pieces out and make it make the noise. Your stock bike doesn't do it. So you can't say anymore because it came that way.
Huh. Okay.
It might make the, you know.
Oh, that's right. Now I was thinking something else was hitting on my bike. Okay, go on.
So that's a big thing. So how do you avoid these problems? You start with that experiment that I did, that I told you about on the blog site, learning what the adjusters do.
Right.
And then once you have an understanding of that, then you start messing with it. You make the bike deliberately handle bad. Like we talked about in the last podcast, you make the front do one thing and the back do the other thing, and then you go ride the bike. Now, you got to be careful. You don't want to crash.
Right.
Right?
Don't crash.
Crashing's on you. You can crash. It's totally okay, but it's on you. Well, you're going to crash. You might as wear your gear and be ready for it. If you don't want to crash, don't race. And you start experimenting and see what things do. And then you compare what you feel, what you think you feel, with what the reality of the bike changes are.
Okay.
Is it even possible for what you said is going on to be going on? Well, let's say this. Let's say you make it so the forks don't move. And then the rider comes in and goes, oh, the forks are bottoming. Well, they can't be bottoming. What's going on? Well, what's going on is that once they're bottom, they don't move.
Right.
So that's the most similar thing that this rider has to describe, right? That's the secret of figuring out if the sun is going around us or vice versa. You have to look at the totality of the thing. You have to question all of the stuff. You can't have any one thing, like that guy I gave the refund to who is convinced that you can never change the rebound. Right? That's just crazy. So that's what you have to do. You have to be open-minded and you have to start working. You have to play with the adjustments that you have, and you build this foundation. You develop the data collecting stuff in your brain that you can, because the best thing in the world to have is a writer who comes in and tells you the same thing that the data is showing you.
Semioticians, I'm going to use some of my college education here. Semioticians say there's a difference between the symbol and the referent. Understand that any given writer has only X number of symbols in their head that they can use to communicate with you. What you need to figure out is what they are trying to refer to.
And that's
to.
What a good crew chief does. A good crew chief pays attention to the totality of what the writer is saying. And the physical gestures they make are the most valuable thing.
Hey, are those new drop cloths on the bikes back here?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
Dust covers.
Dust covers.
They're drop cloths when they're used as, you know, when you're painting the house. But when they're on top of the motorcycle,
then they're dust covers. All right, go on.
So... Michael is just crazily observant, and you made me forget what I was saying.
That's okay. Let's talk about the claw hammers.
So do we have time for that?
Toolboxes and claw hammers.
Toolboxes is a whole... We've got 15 minutes. So
yeah, let's do the toolbox.
An old question we got was, you know, suggestions for toolboxes for going to the racetrack.
Got it.
And I think we touched on it a little bit once, but it's definitely something that we can cover. So... the number one thing is to have some system of organization that means that you don't have to dig through to find the tool that you need.
Right.
Let's for example, when I'm working AMA weekends, you know, you've got the truck in the paddock.
Right.
And you've got the hot pit wall set up.
Right.
Right. Two separate places. Now, club racers don't have to do that rigmarole. We just have all of our stuff in one place, mm-hmm. and we ride our bike out to the track from there.
Right.
But... when you have the big fancy setup, you know, you got to work on the bike at the pit wall. But, you know, you're not going to do crash damage repair there.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to do the normal stuff, which is wheel changes and, you know, clicker adjustments, right? So, you know, I need these three tools to change the wheel.
Right.
And I need these two other tools to change all the clickers. And that's all I got to take with me.
Right.
Right? So every step of the way is some version of that. You're at home. You have all the tools you have. And now you're going to go to the track for a track day or a race. You don't need to take all the tools you have.
Right.
You need to take only the tools that are relative that you're probably going to need. Let's face it. If you cartwheel the bike off into oblivion, you're going to be in the ambulance. You don't need tools to repair the bike.
No.
And it's not happening today.
No.
So.
Go ahead.
And then, so probably the thing you want is to spend a lot of thought on is what container to carry these tools.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go down to, you know, any hardware store or Sears store or
Harbor,
Snap-on truck Harbor
Freight
or Harbor Freight, any place.
Those guys are sending me emails 3 times a week. It's evil.
They
it's
have
just evil.
Multiple kinds of toolbox choices.
Right.
Right? And so you pick the toolbox that works for you. So Bruce Lynn has a little metal toolbox where the lid opens up and has like one little compartment. And every tool he needs to do every job on a TZ250 ever needed is all in that, right, one box.
Really?
And every job that you're going to do at the racetrack.
Okay, got it.
Okay? Which means includes changing the crankshaft.
Right, I've seen you do that.
I have my big roll-around toolbox because when I'm at the racetrack, I'm working on all kinds of different, not just my bikes, you know,
right.
all these potential customer bikes, and I'm driving a motorhome and a trailer that I have to get to the racetrack, and I might have to make repairs on the way.
Right.
Now, that's not the issue that it was when I was driving across the country. But basically, I needed all my tools.
But yeah, and you really are. You do need all your tools.
Yeah.
Because it's definitely a potential that you're going to be...
Well,
somebody could cartwheel a bike.
Yes.
And you need to work on it overnight.
Exactly. So I have a system that takes that into consideration. I have a big enough toolbox. It's got wheels. I got a trailer with a ramp.
Mm-hmm.
I roll it up into the trailer. I got a place in the box. I got straps. I strap it down. That box is accessible when I'm... loaded,
mm-hmm.
so I can get tools out to fix the motorhome on the side of the road, whatever.
Right.
So you find the level of tools that you need, and then you bring those tools with you. So if you're a track day person, you know, you need some screwdrivers and some wrenches to be able to change the wheels.
That's
but you don't need a 13-millimeter anything, right? You don't, right? You need one crescent wrench. You gotta, okay. This then allows you to have a toolbox that you can just reach in, grab the tool you need, and go.
Right? I have, okay. Here's
and stop stealing my tools.
I'm not stealing your tools.
That's
for Eric Anderson.
My tools end up in your toolbox. It's theft.
We blame Eric for these things. here's my I've thought a fair amount about this because I'm not an AMA pro mechanic, But I do a lot of track days and club racing. And the same thing as you. The bike goes down, it cartwheels, my weekend's done. Okay? I'm not fighting for points or anything like that. So, I have stands, front and rear.
Those aren't tools.
Hold on. This is part of my pack.
We're talking about the toolbox.
The toolbox? Okay. It's just the tools that get me to get the wheels off, replace levers, replace pegs and things like that. The stuff that I'm
going to... Well, yeah, so this leads to what I was going to say. How do you pick what tools to buy in the first place? You go to the tool place.
Right.
And they're going to have sales. And right. They're going to have these kits.
Right.
So you don't go buy a 10-millimeter no. combination wrench.
That's insane.
You buy the set that goes from 8 to 19.
Right.
Right? And you can bring all of those. It's not that much space.
Right.
Right? And then you buy the set of screwdrivers and the set of pliers. I still have all of those tools from my original set. I went down to Sears when there was a Craftsman sale. I mm-hmm. bought a set of sockets and ratchets, yeah. metric, right? All of those. That's where you start.
Right.
And you are going to have a few tools with you at the track that you rarely need. But it's one little socket. Bring right. the thing. What I don't like is those kits where it comes with a box that has a space for each tool.
Okay.
Those don't work in the long run. They take up more space. I have a toolbox that I then put the tools into. And okay. I would recommend something that has drawers. It divides into small compartments.
I'm getting
if
there.
You have yeah. one big deep box, then the tool you need is always on the box.
Always, right.
Okay.
Always. So go ahead.
A box that's a little bit bigger than the smallest size you need. You know, once you need to find a space in your trailer or your truck for a toolbox,
mm-hmm.
a toolbox that's 6 inches longer, you're still going to be able to get it in there.
Right.
So you're better off to have a little bit of extra space so you don't have tools on top of each other. But understand, when you get to the track, they're going to be all mixed up anyway because they were in the toolbox while you're
bouncing
driving.
Around.
So don't sweat it too much.
Be sure you have
and T-handles.
Yeah, T-handles are great. The little triple thing, it's got an 8, a 10, and a 12 socket on it.
Those are a pain in the ass because they always bump into things when you're spinning them.
They can be really useful for like brakes and stuff like that. Always make sure you have.
I would recommend taking my advice about a specific tool over his advice about a specific tool.
Always make sure that you have the right socket for the axles. Because
so then that's the final step of it, right? Okay, so now you're going to the track with bike X.
Right.
And you either have a toolbox like mine where you know you got every damn tool there is, you don't have to worry about it, or you make like you're going to change the wheels on your bike before you load, and you go, okay, this tool, this tool, this tool. And if you want to, you can put all of those tools, there's what, 7 of them,
right.
in a burlop sack and just take that.
That's the tool, and that's the tire changing kit. The other thing that I would recommend that has worked
tire really, gauge.
Tire gauge, brake bleeding stuff.
No.
You don't think so? Okay.
Well, okay.
That's a fairly low priority.
No, it's actually a really high priority, but it's something that if you need that at the track, your bike wasn't ready and you shouldn't have gone to the track.
Okay.
Red Proctor had our Wednesday rule. He was the guy that ran the club in Hawaii. And the Wednesday rule was, if my bike's not ready for the race by Wednesday, then I'm not racing that bike.
I'm going to say something controversial. One of the other things that I want for my going to the track toolbox, the actual box with the tools in it, I want it to be sturdy enough that I can stand on. Because if you've got a very limited amount of space in your truck or your van,
at least sit on it.
You could sit on it, or you can use it as a step to help load the bike.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. When you're loading, when you're doing this transporting across the world mm-hmm. thing, everything that has a dual use, it really maximizes its value. Absolutely.
And the other thing,
you're not going to bring a freaking stool, right?
Right.
You can step on a toolbox.
Jesus.
So that just means buy a decent toolbox.
Yeah, yeah. Buy a good toolbox. And here's the other thing: you've read about it in Road Racing World. I truly believe this. I go to the dollar store. I buy these cheap-ass little plastic $1 toolboxes, and all they are is a way of carrying separate types of stuff in a blue plastic container. And that way...
Or Tupperware containers or whatever.
You know?
So, because, if you put all your stuff into those big containers...
You're never going
to
find it.
You need to have little boxes inside there.
Containerized shipping. It works for the overseas Oriental container line. It'll work for you.
Yeah. Now, the thing to be careful of... you see that blue box over there?
Where Which one?
Right down there next to my gear bag.
Right.
The light blue one.
Okay.
That box was shipped from Hawaii
okay.
for the first 24-hour race that Team Hawaii did in 1986.
Okay. Why do we have to be careful of it? Haunted?
No. you can't get those anymore.
Oh, why?
All the new ones that are clear with the red lids or whatever, they break in 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Though, if you want a plastic container that lasts, you want to get the Rubbermaid ones.
The real
They don't have the folding lids. They have a separate lid. But that's the problem because you can lose the lid. And they're kind of a little bit flexible and everything.
But that's not bad if you got to squeeze them in. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
They're definitely tougher for the long run.
Yeah, let's go see who freaking text messages.
Two-minute board?
Why not?
Two claw hammers.
Why?
I don't know why. So I have three hammers in my toolbox.
Right.
I have a large Thor-like sledgehammer for when you've got to whack stuff. But actually,
isn't that usually for customers?
Yeah. Here's the neat thing about a solid hammer like that. It's got a short handle, so you hold it close to the head. You can hit very gently and still have the inertia, right?
So
that you have great control and you're dunking. You're not wailing. If you have to swing at something like you're doing something wrong and you're going to smash your fingers, don't do it. Then I have a medium-sized ball-peen hammer that I use for most stuff. And then I have a non-bounce rubber mallet thingy. It had the sand in the head of it. So
dead blow hammer.
Yeah, dead blow hammer, right? There's no claw hammers in my toolbox. So,
you know, I have a dead blow hammer. I'm not sure where it came from.
I gave it to you.
Did you
really? Yeah, because mine was getting beat up, and I bought it because the ends get a little chewed up when you wax stuff. And I gave it to you because I had a new one.
I love that thing.
Yeah, those things rock. Anyway, a claw hammer, let's face it, when you're whacking something, what's on the other end of the hammer doesn't matter very much.
Right.
And a claw hammer is a carpentry tool that's quite useful if you're doing carpentry. But, you know, a ball peen hammer fits in your toolbox better, and you got the two ends that you can use as opposed to the claw hammer you're never going to use on a motorcycle.
Right.
The ball peen end you don't use very often, but sometimes. Anyway, I'm on Facebook the other day, and there's some guy's picture. He did an engine rebuild, and there's the before pictures, and either the bike sat outside in the rain, with the head off, it was full of water and rust and everything, or it was a blown head gasket that it was then let to sit for a long time. I don't know what caused the damage.
Right.
And he's all happy because he's done the work himself and he's put it back. So, you know, it's not all perfect, but it's good enough and the bike's going to run. You should be proud of the guy, and we all start somewhere. He's not charging somebody for this work. He's doing his own work.
Absolutely.
But one of the pictures shows the engine and two claw hammers. Not one claw hammer next to his engine. Two! What's going on, man?
Please, somebody explain that to us. Send us an email. Tell you what. Send us something from Hickory Farms and put in the message an explanation as to the two claw hammers. He's Ed Sorbo.
He's Michael Gugis.
Aloha.